You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Okay, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program. Dr. Mike Newcomb filling in for today and actually through the rest of the week, and then for the most part next week. Tom is out in Germany right now. I'm going to get up to date on what he's doing. He's doing incredible work in Germany. But we do have a guest on the line. I want to get to the guest first. So without further ado, Eric, let's go to our guest and welcome him to the table. Hello, Gene Connors. Hello, Gene. Oh, let me put him on here. Hold on.
Mike, you got to work Gene. The lines there.
I'm trying to get Gene on the line here. Can you?
I can hear you guys.
We got him.
Oh, I got you, Gene. Sorry about that, buddy. So, yeah, hey, Gene, welcome to the program here today. We wanted to talk to you about what's happening in the great town of Bisbee and what your council is actually doing and proposing. So tell us a little bit about this unique event here.
Well, it's no longer a proposed ordinance. It was codified 5-2 in favor of going forward with creating a section 17 of our city codes to sell city licensing for civil unions here, and they're for same sex or heterosexual couples. We are not going to discriminate against anyone that wants to get a civil union, provided they're of the legal age.
Right. So now this is obviously going to be somewhat controversial, Gene. As you know, especially in this state. I'm here in Phoenix, Arizona right now, and that's where we're broadcasting from, 1480 KPHX. And, you are very well aware of the conservative nature of the state that we live in, and also the fact that our state constitution, correct me if I'm wrong here, Gene, but does not the state constitution in Arizona designate that marriage is indeed one man and one woman?
It does.
So how will that affect your
two election cycles ago? The citizens of Arizona voted down a ban on same-sex marriage. So they don't recognize it, but they did not vote to ban same-sex marriage.
Interesting, very interesting. Now Bisbee is what, about 5,600 residents down there in southeast Arizona?
Yep, just right around there, give or take.
Give or take. And would you say, Gene, that it's generally a conservative area, or is it a liberal area? How would you describe Bisbee?
The city of Bisbee is not. No, it's, although we met quite a few people with very conservative opinions last night. But in general, I think that the city of Bisbee is very, very friendly, non-discriminative, and it's a liberal bastion in a conservative desert.
Liberal oasis, right? No doubt about it. Let me ask you this, Gene. Now, you're a first-term council member, correct?
Correct.
Yeah, so what motivated you to sort of tackle this as a topic in your first term? Because it's clearly a very controversial issue.
Sure. Yeah, for about an hour and a half, because the opponents signed up earlier than the proponents. For about an hour and a half, I heard an awful lot of Leviticus, Romans, Genesis, and also me being elected with an agenda. And to answer your question, this started a little more than 2 months ago with just a simple conversation I was having with somebody here in Bisbee, and it started with something like, wouldn't it be nice if Bisbee was able to ultimately do what happened last night, recognize civil unions and stop discriminating against same-sex relationships. So that is really how it started.
Excellent, excellent. Well, look, we're very happy and proud to hear that you're down there in Bisbee, what you're doing with this civil union. Now, they would get it's called a civil union certificate, correct?
Correct. Yeah.
Now, is there a difference between a civil union certificate versus a license? Walk us through a little bit of the legalese there.
Well, it would be a license to enter into a civil union, and the city attorney is working on the exact language of that. As you know, it passed 5-2. Last night, but it's going to be 30 days. It won't be until May 2nd that it's actually becomes part of our city code.
Okay.
So we're working on the exact language. But all of the restrictions that you would find with applying for a marriage license are, you know, you can't be married. You have to be 18, sound mind, and, you know, I mean, there are some qualifications to getting this, but it's for all intents and purposes the same restrictions and grants the same rights.
Right. Now tell us about some of the specific rights that would be afforded to a couple if they were able to get this civil union certificate. What rights would they be afforded that they currently are not having right now?
Well, first of all, it's only going to be recognized and honored within the city limits of Bisbee.
Right.
Won't be honored in any other municipality in Arizona. Mm-hmm. Let's say there's somebody who is an employee of the city of Bisbee. His or her partner would be able to buy into the insurance program. That doesn't mean that the city would be paying for that person's insurance, but
right. But they would have access to purchase it.
Insurance companies are in business to collect premiums, so it's a win-win for them, for an insurance company. The partner would be able to be insured. They would be able to make decisions in the hospital. They would be able to make decisions on the deceased, you know, whether the body is to be buried in the Evergreen Cemetery or cremated.
Sure.
So, you know, those kinds of decisions would be afforded them.
Yeah, that's awesome. Now, do you have a hospital actually in the city of Bisbee or no?
Oh, we sure do. We've got a great hospital down here. Copper Queen Community Hospital. It's a rural, you know, hospital, and it's very well accommodating. In fact, they're building a huge ER wing right now.
Excellent, excellent. Well, listen, Gene, thank you for all the good hard work that you're doing, especially in this state. I know oftentimes we're looked at as pariahs when it comes to the national stage in the world community for some of the draconian conservative measures that pass here in the state, and it's great to see that at least down there in Bisbee, as you said, a liberal oasis in this vast desert of conservatism here in Arizona, that there's some meaningful legislation being passed that's going to afford people liberty and freedom and the right to love one another without discrimination. So I commend you for that, Gene. And one last quick question, Gene. I hear a little bit of an East Coast sort of Philadelphia accent there. Are you from the East Coast?
Are you serious? I've been
yes.
in Arizona for 40 years, but I did spend the first 12 years of my life in northern New Jersey.
Yeah, I didn't right. hear it. I could totally hear it. I can totally hear it.
Really?
So.
Come on, man. I've been here a long time.
I don't
hear
it.
I want to say something. You know, I listened to a little bit of your radio station on the phone here before we actually started talking, and it sounded great. And I'm actually sitting in KBRP LP radio. It's a community radio station down here in Bisbee that is fantastic, forward thinking, and does programming much like yours. And I'm so honored to be on your show. And check out KBRP LP. It's a fantastic radio station down here in Bisbee.
And you can listen to us online at 1480kphx.com. Click on the Listen Live link.
Right. And then also Tom Hartman. Don't forget TomHartman.org.
Of course.
Or .com, actually. All right. Well, listen, Gene, thanks a lot. I appreciate your time on here. Keep up the good work.
Hey, Dr. Mike, thanks a lot.
Okay, buddy. Bye-bye now. All right. There you have it. So Gene Connors weighing in with his thoughts. A first-term city council member, Eric, and out there passing legislation.
Getting the work done.
That is actually expanding liberty and freedom for the people here in America. So listen, when we get back, we'll be taking your phone calls, 1-866-987-TOM, T-H-O-M. That's 1-866-987-8466.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Dr. Mike Newcomb sitting in for Tom Hartman, broadcasting 1480 KPHX. All righty, welcome back to the Tom Hartman Program. A special thanks to Gene Connors, the city council member, first term member out there in Bisbee, Arizona, actually getting it through, Eric, through the council.
Way to take it up, the bull by the reins.
Absolutely.
Or whatever it is.
And this is a huge issue, and I want to talk about this issue, too, and open up the phone lines, because, as I've said in the past, if you don't have fundamental equality for all of God's children, then you don't have democracy. And I know right now the Supreme Court has heard arguments about the quote-unquote constitutionality of DOMA, the Defense of Marriage Act, at the federal level, which, in essence, discriminates against gay couples federally, but also whether or not states could individually regulate marriage as well and discriminate against gay couples. And I think this is one of the major, major civil rights issues, human rights issues of our times, and I clearly want to talk about that today. And that number is 1-866-987-TOM, T-H-O-M. Again, it's 1-866-987-8466. So if you have any of your own unique thoughts on this particular topic, if you're for it, if you believe that two people should marry, regardless if it's a man and a man or a woman and a woman or a man and a woman, then, hey, let us know. But if you happen to disagree, then I want to hear your arguments why you're against allowing individuals, two consenting adults, to marry. So that being said, I do want to let people know that I'm sitting in for Tom today, tomorrow, and Friday, so Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday, and then all of next week, excepting Tuesday, Tom's going to do a remote broadcast. But just so the listeners understand what Tom is up to and where he's at, he is in Germany as we speak, and Tom is part, a very integral part of an organization called Salem International. And let me just tell you about this particular entity, and if you want to check it out yourself, you can go to saleminternational.org. That's S-A-L-E-M international.org. But this is a non-denominational Christian not-for-profit welfare organization that was founded back in 1957 by Gottfried Mueller and a circle of friends in Stuttgart. And the name actually is a derivative from Hebrew, Eric, meaning from shalom, and you know what shalom means in Hebrew, right?
Yeah, peace.
Yes, exactly. It means peace. So all of these Salem projects are affiliated through the shared values of peace, helping those in need, and respect for life. And in this sense, Salem is actively working in global hotspots to help people in difficult situations, regardless of their beliefs or their nationality. So that's, again, doing God's work, Eric.
Yes, I like that. I wish there was something around here that I could relate to like that.
I mean, it's amazing. Tom is an incredible human being, so he's out there with people of like mind, and I believe that the founder, Gottfried Mueller, wanted every year all of the people who participate in Salem International, they go to Germany, and for a week they all bond together, they have fun.
How many people form?
Oh, I don't know how many particular people go to this event, but they're all there in fellowship and kinship and the spirit of peace, and they celebrate each other. And this is what Gottfried Mueller wanted them to do as part of his legacy.
It's not like an L. Ron Hubbard thing, right?
No, by no means is it anything like that. So, okay, well, listen, let's get to some of the Freedom Lines here. Again, let me give you the number. It's 1-866-987-8466, and want to talk about this civil union issue that we just talked about a little bit earlier. So let's go first to Damien. He's on Sirius XM Radio Satellite in Long Island, New York. So, Damien, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
How are you?
Every day's a blessing, Damien.
Good. I'm glad. I hope you're healthy and happy and your family as well. Number one, I lean towards a libertarian viewpoint, and I don't believe that anybody should be discriminated against. And I think I wholeheartedly believe that same-sex couples should have every right that heterosexual marriage couples have, but I don't believe in calling it marriage because, you know, it seems that the left is very hung up on this word marriage. They want to be more inclusive, and instead of focusing on the more important issue, which is the actual right, the rights that the same-sex couples would be having. And I have another comment. It just seems to me that the left always talks about, you know, the democracy, and it's one of the things that Tom always talks about, you know, democracy. Well, the people in California through Prop 8 had an election, and democratically they voted it down. So now when the libs don't like it, they go to the courts. So which one is it? Do you like democracy, or are you going to keep crying about it until, you know, you get your way? I mean, are we for democracy or not? And, you know, so the idea of marriage, that's between a man and a woman. The rights should be bestowed upon all.
Okay. All right. Well, listen, Damien, thank you for your time. I'm going to get to some of the other callers at 1-866-987-TOM, T-H-O-M. That's 1-866-987-8466 as we have this discussion about civil unions, gay marriage. Look, I don't care, you know, how you artificially try to distinguish, Damien, between gay marriage or not gay marriage. The bottom line is, you know, it should be a fundamental right afforded to all individuals, regardless if you're a heterosexual man, if you're a heterosexual man and a heterosexual woman, that's fine. If you're two gay men, if you're two gay women, as far as I'm concerned, I think that all those consenting adults should have a right to actually marry. And if you don't allow that in this country, then what we are doing is codifying into law discrimination. We're creating institutional discrimination. And to me, it's no different than when women didn't have a right to vote, when African Americans didn't have a right for freedom. I mean, you name it. This is a very, very serious issue, and it's a major flaw in America right now, in our democracy, and it really threatens the vibrancy of our democracy. And that's why the Supreme Court, quite frankly, is taking up these particular issues right now, because, you know, it is about fundamental rights, and it does have to do with the Constitution. And are we going to allow in our constitutions, whether they be federal constitutions or whether they be state constitutions, are we going to allow actually codifying discrimination into those particular documents?
I think it all comes down to one thing. Why would you care?
Yeah.
In the least, what anybody else is feeling for somebody else.
Right.
I mean, why do you care? Does it interfere with your life in any way?
Right, exactly.
No.
How is it destroying traditional marriage when we know it?
It's not interfering with your life in any way, or your religion, or anything. You can still go to church. You can still do your thing.
Absolutely.
It has nothing to do with you, so leave it alone.
Actually, traditional marriage is self-destructing on its own accord, with 50% of the people getting divorced within 5 years. We'll be back. Stay with us.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
Dr. Mike Newcomb sitting in for Tom Hartman, broadcasting from the Valley's Progressive Talk, 1480 KPHX. Okay, welcome back to the Tom Hartman Program. Dr. Mike sitting in. Right now, Eric, we got a full board of callers. I love Tom's
always
callers. You put a topic out there, I'll tell you, Tom's callers, his listeners, they call in, and the phone lines are just lighting up. There's flashing green all throughout here. It looks like a...
Don't let it distract you, Mike.
It's not going to distract. Hopefully, I won't have a seizure from it. But in any case, 1-866-987-THOM is the number. 1-866-987-8466. Before I get to the calls, though, I saw this on Facebook the other day, Eric. And I'll tell you, that's one of the things I do like about Facebook. I know you could actually spend a lot of idle time just sort of doing...
I know lots of people who
nothing
spend
on
their whole work day
but
on
but
Facebook.
You often see good quotes, though. A lot of times people put up good quotes, little nuggets, food for thought, if you will. And since we're talking about marriage equality here, I thought it would be appropriate to read this one. It probably was. But in any case, so check this out. I thought this was a genius. It was a Michael Schiller. I don't even know who he is. But this is what he posted. He said, marriage equality threatens traditional marriage in the same way that abolishing slavery made freedom less enjoyable for white people. I think that basically sums it up. So in other words, what this guy is saying, that, boy, if you let the slaves have freedom, if you take them out of the shackles, then guess what? Our freedom is really not going to be quite what it used to be, Eric.
Right, yeah.
No, so it's great. Marriage equality threatens traditional marriage in the same way that abolishing slavery made freedom less enjoyable for white people. That about pretty much sums up the whole marriage equality issue.
I know that Michelle Schacht is like kind of a has-been performer.
Right.
Have you heard of her?
No.
Oh, well, she went to San Francisco to perform. She's a singer, folk singer. And she got up on stage and started ranting about how if gays get married, it's going to end the world, meaning God is going to take his wrath upon us.
Right.
And she did this in San Francisco. And I just, you know, I used to like her as an artist.
Yeah,
not
going to
listen anymore.
I wouldn't listen if that's what she's saying. All right, let's get to the Freedom Lines right now. Let's go. First up in the queue is Lisa. And I believe Lisa is tuning in via Free Speech TV in Winfield, West Virginia. So, Lisa, welcome to the table.
Hello, how you doing?
Hey, I'm doing well. Hey, I heard about that guy in Buckwild in West Virginia who died. Shane Gandy. Did they ever find out what happened with him?
It was asphyxiation through the muffler. What do you call that?
Right. They were in the mud. Wow, that was pretty sad. But anyway, I don't want to get sidetracked with that. So, Lisa, what do you think about this whole gay marriage debate, this marriage equality, which I like to call it?
Well, I honestly don't think it's anybody else's business, and that's what makes it a civil right, because it doesn't affect anybody but gay people.
Right. Well, why do you often hear conservatives say that somehow or another this is going to undermine traditional marriage? What people do in the privacy of their own home, how does that really undermine what other people are doing?
It doesn't.
It doesn't,
that's
right?
That's the whole point.
Yeah. I mean, I agree with you 100%. So you think it's basically a civil right, nobody else's business, leave them alone and let well enough alone, correct?
That's exactly right, as long as you have two consenting adults. And then people go on to say it includes bestiality and pedophilia, you know.
Right.
But those animals and those children cannot give consent, plus that's just a sick way of looking at things.
No, it is a sick way. We know it's not going to lead to bestiality. So, all right, Lisa, thank you very much for your comments. We appreciate it.
Okay, thank you.
Lisa calling in from West Virginia. But we had that out here. Remember J.D. Hayworth?
Yeah, I was going to bring that up. J.D. Hayworth. Yeah.
Former Congressman J.D. Hayworth.
Who had a radio show for a brief moment.
Period. And it also ran for what? Governor?
I think he was running for governor.
And he lost horribly.
Yeah.
But in any case, he was a congressman out here who really believed that ultimately.
He said people are going to be marrying their horses.
Yeah. And that's just, I don't know how they go from two consenting human beings
who love each other
to somebody wanting to get it on with their horse.
Right. I don't get that either. That's a big leap.
It's a very, very big leap. All right, listen, 1-866-987-TOM is the number, 1-866-987-8466. Hey, I'm going to get to these calls in a quick second, but I did want to play a few of these audio clips, too. Let me just start out with one, because we talked about this guy, Senator Rob Portman from Ohio, and his son actually came out of the closet, so to speak, and confessed to him or just told him that indeed he was gay, he has a lover, and he felt that it was important that his father knew who he was. And interestingly enough, Eric, ever since this happened, other gay children seem to be coming out, in particularly conservative Republican areas. I don't know if you heard Congressman Matt Salmon, who was also another guy who ran for governor here in Arizona, and he ran and he lost against Janet Napolitano, a very close race, and I remember that very distinctly. But even back then when he was running, he kept saying that we need to take the state back in the name of God. And I was one of the few people to bring that up during the governor's race, and hey, we got a candidate here who wants to establish a theocracy. He wants to take Arizona and take it back in the name of God. Well, lo and behold, he just was interviewed recently. He got reelected to Congress, and his son came out, too, and said, hey, you know, Dad, I'm gay. And he was asked openly on this interview whether or not that he would accept, you know, his son's belief in marriage equality. And Congressman Salmon was very clear about it, saying, look, I don't embrace that. He still feels that it's a one-man, one-woman thing. We had Senator Flake, too. Jeff Flake here in Arizona also was interviewed, and he, too, also believes that it's just one man, one woman. But this guy, Rob Portman, the senator from Ohio, I do want to play this clip because slowly but surely, conservative Republicans who were on record as being against marriage equality are slowly but surely coming around and evolving, if you will, to this issue. So
also Mark Kirk from Illinois, who had a stroke.
Right.
When he recovered from his stroke, it didn't take him to have a gay child to do this, but he realized life is brief.
Right, precious.
And he flipped on the gay marriage thing, too.
Very nice. All right, well, let's see what Rob Portman has to say. Are we ready to go to the tape here?
I'm announcing today a change of heart on an issue that a lot of people feel strongly about. It has to do with gay couples' opportunity to marry. And during my career in the House and also the last couple of years here in the Senate, you know, I've taken a position against gay marriage, rooted in part in my faith and my faith tradition, and had a very personal experience, which is my son came to Jane, my wife and I, told us that he was gay and that it was not a choice and that, you know, that's just part of who he is, and he'd been that way ever since he could remember. And that launched an interesting process for me, which was kind of rethinking my position, talking to my pastor and other religious leaders, and going through a process of, at the end, changing my position on the issue. I now believe that people ought to have the right to get married.
All right, so that I thought was a very powerful statement by Senator Rob Portman, who actually said he changed. He had a change of heart. And that, quite frankly,
after reviewing it with his pastor.
Right, but you often hear with conservatives how they, you know, they're very steadfast in their ways, okay? But you also hear about the compassionate conservative. You know, well, I'm a compassionate conservative. Well, oftentimes it's the conservative who is very reluctant to change their ways and to have a change of heart, because that typically really is what conservatism is in a nutshell. It's about believing in something and never being open to another idea, never being open to a different angle, and believing that despite the fact that there might be facts out there that argue against your belief system, they just remain intransigent. They will not change their ways no matter what. And I have some more audio to support that throughout the program. But to see Senator Rob Portman say that, look, I did have a change of heart. One, in order to have a change of heart, you at least have to have a heart, okay? So he's showing us that, look, he does have a heart, and that heart is open to tolerance and acceptance and love of his fellow human beings, and in particular, his own offspring, his son, who, as he said, it's not a choice. It's not something that, you know, he said one day, you know what, I'm going to decide to become gay. You just are born that way. And as I said, it's being put to these politicians more and more and more, particularly conservative Republican politicians, and they're going to have to face the music eventually, because this is a situation, it's something that's not going to remain static. Slowly but surely, states are passing their own laws that are saying, indeed, these marriages are legal, they're constitutional, and we're no longer going to codify and institutionalize this discrimination. And the Supreme Court is weighing in with it. If you look at the demographics, you look at the polls are clearly changing on this issue. Right now, most of the national polls, if you look at it, the majority of people actually believe now in marriage equality. And there is a component of those demographics that are particularly the elderly, the people who are, say, 60, 65 years or older, who are very traditional, very much set in their ways, and are very much reluctant to change those traditional, quote-unquote, views. And I don't like to use that traditional viewpoint, because, quite frankly, when you say something is traditional, it confers upon it sort of a certain acceptance, a certain respectability. But I don't believe that their, quote-unquote, traditional view of marriage is respectful, quite frankly. I find it highly, highly discriminatory. But with the demographics changing, and more than half the country, and when you look at the younger people, even the young kids, 18 to 25 or 18 to 34, however you look at those two demographics, they are not only 50% plus, they're much, much higher majorities who support marriage equality. So as this elder generation dies off and this younger generation starts to reproduce and, you know, more and more young people become accepting of it, you're going to see a society that pretty much is going to say, look, we believe in marriage equality. And if these politicians don't change and evolve with the times, then guess what? They're ultimately going to lose their seats. And I think you saw that as a reflection in the last election. You saw in that last election where minorities, in particular Latinos, who are an emerging force in our democracy. Some people estimate 25% of our population will be Hispanic within the next 20, 30 years. So if the Republican Party and conservative Republicans don't begin to evolve and have a quote-unquote change of heart, then we're going to be relegated to the hinterlands of political office. So stay with us. We'll be back, and we'll take your calls.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
Dr. Mike Newcomb sitting in for Tom Hartman, broadcasting from 1480 KPHX. Howdy, welcome back. Dr. Mike Newcomb sitting in for Tom Hartman, and you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. And let's just get back to the Freedom Lines right now, as many people are waiting very patiently to weigh in with their thoughts. Let's go first to Anna on the line. She's listening via WWRL in New York City, and she wants to weigh in on the marriage equality issue. Anna, welcome to the program.
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing well. Every day's a blessing, Anna. How are you in New York City?
Very well, very well. I just have a concern. I mean, I don't have any say in gay marriage. Who am I to even give anybody my opinion? It's not. And I disagree with the conservative comment made earlier. I don't think that a conservative is definitely stuck in their way. I picture myself a conservative.
Uh-huh.
I feel that if we're going to give freedom to everyone, which is, you know, part of the United States, we should definitely give also plural marriages, polygamy, et cetera, at polyamory, and so on.
What?
Right.
That's so what it's going to lead to, I feel.
So you feel that if we say, but why can't we just, we can have a definition of marriage. We could just say that marriage is an institution that recognizes the consenting love of two individuals, two consenting adults. So whether it's a man and a woman, or a man and a woman, but you have two consenting adults, that could be the definition there. I mean,
but polygamy?
Yeah, but I don't think necessarily.
No, I mean, no,
that goes back
like,
to the argument about the horse, marry the horse.
Yeah.
I just feel like, you know, we can't really put a definition to it. Then why can't other people say, well, that's discriminatory as well, that I can't marry three or four
two
or five or whatever it is.
Two consenting adults.
Right. Well, that's why I'm saying with the definition. It is two consenting adults. And
right.
As long as you have two consenting adults, I think for the most part, look, society can make any rules it wants, right? And I mean, if society wanted to, they could say if everybody agreed with that concept that, you know what, we should have plural marriages and polygamy and you should be able to marry your horse and your dog, et cetera. But I don't think the society that we live in here in America would consent to such a thing. But you're right. Technically, a society could do that if they so chose to do it, but I just don't see it happening here. But listen, let me get to the other callers. I appreciate your time, and thanks for calling into the Tom Hartman program, Anna. Okay, that's Anna from New York City. All right, let's go to Jan. She's been holding from Snowflake, Arizona, out here in our home state, Arizona. She's listening via Free Speech TV. So without further ado, Jan, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
First of all, I want to just say that the whole thing is about discrimination that we've lived with forever.
Correct.
And I'm embarrassed that we even have to talk about this subject.
I'm with you, Jan. I think it's embarrassing that it's gone to the Supreme Court and that there's a very real chance that the Supreme Court might actually side with the conservative bigots and keep up this institutionalized discrimination against gay individuals.
I know. Listen, I have another thought that I want to share that's in line with what you talked about the Latinos earlier. I had a thought the other day that has anybody ever allowed themselves to think that their great-grandchildren's children might have to enter Mexico illegally someday for work and to find food?
Well, people probably don't think of that perspective, but I see what you're getting at, because if you walk in somebody else's shoes and you understand the reason why they're doing such a thing, then perhaps you'll be a little bit more compassionate and sympathetic to their plight in life.
Well, overall, you know, I just don't think that people equate change as being a positive thing.
Right. Well, change could be positive or it could be negative, but my whole point is that conservatives in America are pretty much against change no matter how you look at it.
They want to conserve.
You know, that's whole part of conservatism is to keep things the same and don't mess with anything and just leave well enough alone. But the problem is it's not well enough. I mean, when you're discriminating against people and saying you're a second-class citizen and you're not going to be afforded the same rights and liberties and freedoms that this couple over here is, then that's not what our founding fathers envisioned when they created this great, vibrant democracy we call America. But listen, thanks a lot for your time, Jan, and thanks for calling in. Okay, that's Jan calling in from Snowflake. Let's get a few more callers in here before we go to the top of the hour, and then we'll obviously, if you stay on hold, I promise I will get to everybody eventually. You just got to be very patient because a lot of people, yes, I can promise that. I'm not saying, I might not deliver, but I can promise it.
You can't promise that.
All right, 1-866-987-TOM, T-H-O-M, that's 1-866-987-8466 is the number. So let's go next to Joan in Elk Creek, Virginia. Joan, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you for taking my call.
Absolutely.
I just wanted to comment about the gay marriage issue and another issue. But as far as the gay marriage issue, yes, I think they should definitely be allowed to get married so they can have legal rights when one dies and the other one can't inherit their property or can't even visit them in the hospital. I mean, these people love each other. They should have our respect. And
isn't that horrible, though?
I live in the very conservative Bible Belt of southwestern Virginia and have some friends who are very conservative religious people, and bless their hearts, they can't even have a female preacher at their church. So that's, you know, that's where they're coming from.
Right. But what you mentioned earlier, Joan, to me is the most shocking thing too, because I'm actually a physician. I care, internal medicine physician, care for the elderly, the geriatric population. And to me, when you have two people who love someone, Joan, and you're saying to one of those individuals that you can't go into that hospital room and you can't hold the hand of your loved one while they're going through a terrible illness, or maybe they're dying. You know, they could literally be dying and breathing their last breaths. And to say, because you love that person and you happen to be of the same sex, we're not going to allow you the liberty and the freedom to be there with your loved one in not only a time of need, but perhaps the time of most need. To me, that is cruel that we do that in this society in America today.
That's right. And I just lost my husband a couple of years ago, and what if I couldn't visit him in the hospital? I mean, that would be awful.
Yeah.
And I tried to call the other day. I know this is off the topic. You know, they were talking about gun rights, and like Tom Hartman said, these people don't even know what the Second Amendment says. I'm a literacy coordinator in Southwest Virginia.
Wow.
A lot of people can't even read, so I don't think they've read it. But if,
no.
You know, if they want to own a gun, give them a black powder rifle or give them a musket.
All right. Well, listen, I got it right here. Thanks a lot for your call today, Joan. Appreciate it. Okay, that's Joan from Elk, Virginia. Anyway, we're going to wrap it up. Be back at the top of the hour. Stay tuned. Stay there in the queue, and we'll be back with your calls from the Freedom Line.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Okay, welcome back to hour number two here. Dr. Mike Newcomb sitting in for Tom Hartman. Tom's off in Germany right now. I'm going to tell you a little bit after we speak to our guest here about the organization that he's working with, Salem International. But before we get to that, we do have a guest. Her name is Kim Gandy, and she is the president and CEO of the National Network to End Domestic Violence. And we're going to be talking about common sense gun laws and violence against women in particular during this segment. So without further ado, let me just get Kim on the line right now. Kim, welcome to the program.
Oh, thank you. Delighted to be on the show again.
It's great to have you here, Kim. Yeah, so tell us a little bit about what's happening right now with respect to the common sense gun laws. I mean, every cable station, every news network you turn on right now, you're hearing this raging debate right now, Kim, with respect to guns in America and constitutional rights and First Amendment rights and Second Amendment rights and this right and that right. But oftentimes people don't hear about the incredible amount of violence that is conducted, particularly upon women. So give us a little sort of thumbnail sketch of where we are with all of this.
Well, as an organization that works with victims of violence in all 50 states and all of the territories, we see this with our individual state fatality reports, looking at how women are being killed, and they're being killed with guns. Overwhelmingly, the percentage of women who are killed with guns are killed by intimate partners. 57% of all women killed by a gun are killed by an intimate partner.
Wow.
For men, it's a tiny, you know, it's single digits. It's not even close. There is a dramatic impact on women, particularly women suffering abuse, if there's a gun in the home. And there are a lot of studies on this. The presence of a gun, for example, in a home where there's a domestic violence situation, if there is a gun in the home, it increases the risk of homicide by 500%.
Wow, that is an incredible statistic.
Why
don't we hear about that more often? I mean, that's an incredible stat, Kim. I mean, that's the first time that I've actually heard such a number.
Yeah, exactly. And people say, well, we want women who are victims of abuse to arm themselves. And obviously that's, if you look at the statistics, if there is a gun in the home, whether it's hers or his, she's five times more likely to be killed with it than if there were no gun in the home.
That's an incredible stat. And getting back to that other stat, so you said 57% of women who are actually killed by a gun were killed by somebody with whom they were in an intimate relationship, correct?
An intimate partner or a family member.
Right. So, that is incredible. How are things coming along right now, Kim, with this whole movement, this national network to end domestic violence? Because I saw there's a lot of, it looks like workshops and conferences and things that are happening simultaneously throughout the country. Give the listening audience a little bit of information about what's happening with respect to the different types of communities and organizations coming together to really shine the national spotlight on this.
You know, there are so many groups coming together, and we are working with a lot of them. One of the groups has brought a huge focus to this is Mayors Against Illegal Guns. And if you go to their website, you'll see, I mean, probably the mayor of your town, wherever you live, your mayor is probably on that list.
Yeah, Mayor Stanton.
It's really, really an impressive list of mayors who've come together to say, okay, we recognize the Second Amendment, lots of us are gun owners, lots of us are NRA members, and there is a place for sensible laws.
Right. And isn't that the whole debate here? It's just about common sense, sensible laws. I mean, I know the people on the right and the conservatives are trying to say that the government's coming to take your guns away. The government's coming to deny your liberty, to deny your freedom. But in reality, no one's taking anyone's guns away, are they?
Well, you could. In some cases, if you are convicted of domestic violence, you can have your guns taken away, in theory. Not that many courts are actually doing it, but it's a good idea. It's something they should do. It's called the Domestic Violence Offender Gun Ban. It's in federal law. Unfortunately, it's not very well enforced. If it were enforced, there would probably be a lot fewer domestic violence homicides.
I like that idea, though, Kim. So basically what you're calling for is that if somebody is in a domestic violence or commits an act of domestic violence utilizing a gun, that they should have that gun right, that privilege, taken away from them.
Any act of violence,
correct?
Well, the law provides now if you're a felon or if you're convicted of domestic violence, or if there is a restraining order against you, if the court has been convinced that you are a danger to another person in terms of domestic violence, that you are not entitled to have a gun, and you're not entitled to purchase a gun. And there's where the problem comes in. I'm sure you read about the story in Wisconsin not long ago, the woman who, after 20 years of abuse and death threats, finally said, you know, he's really going to kill me if I don't do something. And she went to court, and it's all over the internet. Zena Houghton told the court what her husband had been doing to her and asked them for a restraining order, and she got one.
Right.
And that restraining order under federal law says he's not entitled to buy a gun. It's illegal for him. If he went to a gun dealer and tried to buy a gun, they would say, no, we cannot sell you a gun. It's a violation of federal law for us.
But is that in a database? Is that in a national database where people can actually look at that and
exactly.
say?
Exactly. It's in a national database. But instead, he just went online and bought one. And they're not required to do background checks online.
Which they should.
He could have gone on Craigslist. But in fact, he went online within a couple of days, bought a gun, went to her place of work, a spa, and shot 7 people, killing 3 of them. One of them, his wife, Zena. And that's 2 of her coworkers left 8 children without mothers.
That is atrocious. That's absolutely horrific.
Because there was no, this was Wisconsin. If he had been next door in Michigan, where even private sellers and internet sellers have to do the criminal background checks, he wouldn't have been able to buy that gun.
Right. No doubt about it. Look, it's perfect sense to me. I mean, look, if you commit a felony or a crime or you kill somebody while you're driving a car, I'm sure your driving privileges would be suspended or your license would be taken away from you. It should be the same thing with a gun. So do you see progress being made, though? I mean, as you go out there and you're crisscrossing the country, Kim, are you seeing more and more people turn up for this movement to end domestic violence, to end the gun violence? What are you seeing out there?
You know, there are so many more people on board with this, as they see what's happening, as they see how different it is in this country compared to other countries. You know, women in the United States are 11 times more likely to be murdered with a gun than
wow.
women in any other high-income country comparable to the United States, 11 times more likely. People are on board with this. If you look at the polls, people say, absolutely, there should be sensible gun laws. Of course there should be a background check. We don't want felons buying
sure.
guns. We don't want abusers buying guns so they can go home and kill their wives or their girlfriends. People absolutely are on board with these background checks. Yet, I'm not sure that we are winning in the court of public opinion that is the legislatures of the
Correct.
Various states, because the gun lobby is so powerful, so
I
powerful,
know.
And we have to be more powerful.
Well, and look, I think if we're persistent, we could definitely make change. Listen, Kim, we got to run right now, but if people want to find out a little bit more information, what's your website?
It's NNEDV.org, National Network to End Domestic Violence.
Okay.
And also Mayors Against Illegal Guns.
All right. Thank you very much.
My pleasure.
Okay. We'll be back in a moment. Stay with us.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Dr. Mike Newcomb sitting in for Tom Hartman, and you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Hey, welcome back, my friends. The Freedom Lines are open. This is Dr. Mike Newcomb sitting in for Tom Hartman. I'll be sitting in today, tomorrow, and Friday, and then all next week, except Tuesday. Tom's going to be doing it remote. But for Tom's fans, just to let you know, he's out in Germany right now, and he wanted me to let you know that he is part of this incredible organization called Salem International. And let me just tell you what it says here on their website. And if you want to check out the website, feel free to do that. It's called saleminternational.org. But it is a non-denominational Christian not-for-profit welfare organization. It was founded back in 1957 by a gentleman of the name Gottfried Mueller, who has since passed. Actually, Tom gave an incredible eulogy for this gentleman, and you can probably access that online as well. But it is he started this back in Stuttgart with a circle of friends, and it comes from the Hebrew name Shalom, which means peace. So all of the Salem projects are affiliated through those shared values of peace, helping those in need, and respect for life. And in this sense, Salem is actively working in global hotspots to help people in difficult situations, regardless of their beliefs or nationality. So Tom's out there for the week, and he is with Kindred Spirit, other people who are part of this Salem International. They meet once a year, and this was the legacy that Gottfried Mueller wanted to leave behind, that once a year, all of these people who give their time, their energy, and an effort to those who are disenfranchised, people who need help, this is what this organization does. And every year, all of those volunteers meet in Germany at the bequest of the deceased, Gottfried Mueller, to basically share common stories, share common values, and dream that the world will hopefully one day be a better place for all of God's children. So that being said, let's get back to the Freedom Lines right now at 1-866-987-TOM, T-H-O-M. That's 1-866-987-8466. Let's go first in the queue, I believe, to Ruthie. Ruthie is listening on Sirius XM Satellite Radio in Palm Beach, Florida. Welcome, Ruthie.
Hi. How you doing? Thanks for taking my call.
Absolutely.
This is from the segment before, actually.
That's okay. Yeah, we talked about marriage equality. We talked about gun
yes.
violence, domestic violence. But we're going to stick a move. Whatever you want to talk about is fair game on the Freedom Lines.
Okay. Well, when I turned on the when I got in the car, you were on the concert in San Francisco with Shock. And
Michelle Shock.
You just left out something that I want to give the San Francisco credit, that as soon as she made her comments, they shut down the show.
Right, right.
Yeah, that was great. That was great.
They shut down the show, so I wanted to, you know, make sure they got their kudos for that, because, you know, they did the right thing.
They all walked
and,
out.
Yes, and then there was something that you had said also about a certain age group with, you know, traditional values.
Right, when you look at the actual polls and the studies, it clearly shows a disproportionate of the elderly who are, you know, against marriage equality, and that a disproportionate amount of the youth are for marriage equality.
Well, I don't call it disproportionate when you say the, because the more the better. So, you know, to me, it's better if that's a bigger number with the younger ones.
Oh, right. Well, that's what I'm
However,
saying.
But I'm 62, so I'm like kind of in that group that you were saying, but we're also the Woodstock babies.
Sure.
And we were the first ones that accepted everybody.
Correct.
No questions asked, you know, just as long as you're a nice person and you're doing good by the world and by other, your fellow man, you're in. So
right.
We didn't care about any of that, and I still don't. And most of the people that I probably, because, you know, you associate with people that are like you, that, you know, they're the same. And we're
sure.
all in our 60s and some in their 70s, and, you know, everybody's, you know, on board with legalizing marijuana for obvious reasons. If, you know, you went to Woodstock, you're on that train too. So,
right.
You know, we're just a very accepting group, but it's not necessarily age, because no. I think each age group also has your division, you know, like.
No, you do. Look, there's going to be there's going to be variability. I agree with you, Ruthie, in each respective age group. But for sure, you know, maybe you're from the Woodstock era, but I'm a geriatric physician, and I can guarantee you that you start getting into the, 75, 80-year-olds.
You're in Arizona, right?
Yeah, but that population are very, very conservative and want to hear nothing about marriage equality. And they will go to their graves believing that, and I don't see that group changing. But listen, I appreciate
that's
your call.
True. And I really don't understand why, you know, it just doesn't affect anybody. That quote that you made earlier, I saw that on Facebook, and it's brilliant.
It is brilliant.
The only other thing I wanted to say quickly was that it seems that the Republicans always need to have some group. There always has to be somebody that's beneath them, that's less
right.
than them.
Absolutely.
And there's an arrogance that is such a turnoff, the self-righteous. And then they're the ones that end up with these people like Sanford. And then he's got the nerve to come back in. And you got somebody like Anthony Weiner that had a picture of his underwear, and he's gone.
Right. But I think you hit it on the head right there when you talk about self-righteous indignation. Yet they say that conservatives that, oh, they're all for liberty and freedom and the Constitution. But
only
you're right. Only for their very small subset of people who believe and think and walk and talk exactly like they do. And I agree 100% with you is that they are the opposites. I mean, instead of being called conservatives, they should be called con artists, because they are not for equality and freedom for all. And you're right. They always need some group to discriminate against, whether it was women back in the day and they couldn't vote, whether it was African Americans during this time of slavery. Here in Arizona, we see major discrimination against Latinos. You know, now it's the gay population. There's always somebody that they want to deny liberty and freedom to, and they're not happy. Unless there's somebody living as a second-class citizen. All right, listen, we got a full line of callers, so thanks a lot, Ruthie. Nice to talk to you. Bye-bye.
Thanks.
All right, that's Ruthie calling in from Palm Beach, Florida, opening up another Freedom Line here on the Tom Hartman program. Let me give you that number. It's 1-866-987-TOM, T-H-O-M. That's 1-866-987-8466. And if you're just tuning in, that quote that she was referring to on Facebook that I saw the other day, I think I have it here somewhere. And yes, it's a guy, Michael Schiller. I don't really quite know who he is. You said he was in the studio here?
Yeah, I think that might be Robert Schiller's. I don't know.
I don't think that's it.
Misremembering it.
No. But in any case, it says marriage equality threatens traditional marriage in the same way that abolishing slavery made freedom less enjoyable for white people. That, to me, sums it all up. That is absolutely brilliant. Listen, lots of people on the Freedom Line, stay with us. We'll be right back with more of the Tom Hartman program.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman program. Call 866-987-THOM.
Dr. Mike Newcomb, sitting in for Tom Hartman, broadcasting from 1480 KPHX. All righty, welcome back to the Tom Hartman program. Dr. Mike sitting in. I'm going to get to these Freedom Lines real quickly here. It's packed right now, so be patient, everybody. I'm working my way through you. But before we do that, Eric, there was a article that was out today. I just want to talk about this, the gun violence, too, because we did have Kim Gandy on a little bit earlier. She's the CEO and president of the National Network to End Domestic Violence. And that That's my
Yeah, stop that, Mike.
I'll have to get that. I'm making little crazy sounds.
I turned
it
off.
In any case, so she was on earlier, and we were talking about gun violence, in particular gun violence as it relates to domestic violence against women, and the numbers are absolutely staggering. But the Center for American Progress just came out with a study, and it was very interesting, Eric, because they said that the states who have the laxest gun rules or laws in place. So in other words, like here in Arizona we're very lax.
Anybody can carry a concealed weapon.
Right. And
legally.
Yeah. You can actually.
Probably if you're a felon, you probably can't. But
you could also take your firearms concealed into establishments like restaurants and bars, places that serve alcohol.
If you have a concealed weapons license, you can carry it into a bar.
Now, it's up to the business, though. The business could say, we don't allow that. But if a business allows it, and many do, you could take literally a gun, pack some heat
anywhere you like,
and go there, and God only knows what's going to happen. But anyway, this study –
drinks, alcohol, and guns don't mix.
No, absolutely not. But they say that the states that have the laxest gun laws, like here in Arizona, are the ones that contribute to the highest shares of national gun deaths and injuries.
Really?
So, I mean –
Go figure,
right? But the funny thing is – not the funny thing. The disappointing thing is that the National Rifle Association would argue – the opposite.
We're the safest state.
Right. That we're the safest state. So they actually have – the Center for American Progress did a graph of the United States, and it showed you in colors, aggregate rankings from 1 to 10, 11 to 20, and so on, all the way up to 41 through 50. And lo and behold, I'm looking right here at Arizona, and we are in the top 10 as far as the highest number of violence committed by guns and the highest number of deaths attributed through a gun
accident. I can think of two big, huge ones right off the bat, Gabrielle Giffords and all those people who died that day, and also JT Reddy killed all his girlfriend's whole family and himself.
Yeah, so and you know what's interesting because
– happened within like a year.
But the NRA, Eric, they'll argue that, you know what, that by having weapons – you know, of destruction.
If everybody had weapons, then nobody would shoot anybody.
So if that's the case, why do they say that at the individual level? But when it comes to North Korea wanting to have a nuclear bomb, or when it comes to Iran to have a nuclear bomb, you know, that philosophy doesn't work, right? You would say, well, boy, the world would be a lot safer if everybody had nuclear weapons, right?
Well, that used to be the old thinking.
Right. So, but what they argue conservatives, they say, look, we don't want North Korea or Iran to have a nuclear weapon, because if they have a weapon, then the chance of violence will be higher and they're going to use it. So in one breath, they want to keep weapons away from sovereign nations that literally want to defend themselves.
Well, I don't know about North Korea, but they are a big joke.
Yeah, but look, we went into Iraq and we said that they had weapons of mass destruction, and that was all.
And there was nothing.
And there was nothing there. You know, so if I was Iran and I saw that my neighbor Iraq was invaded by the United States on the pretense that they had weapons of mass destruction, and the United States sent in military and just comes into your country and wreaks havoc militarily.
Kills your leader and
takes
everything.
What you think if you're Mahmoud Ahmadinejad, well, gee, I have a right to basically secure my country, and if they have all these weapons of mass destruction, then by darn it, I'm going to have one too. Look, it's the same philosophy that the NRA is trying to peddle.
So you really think Iran should have?
I think everybody should not have nuclear weapons, period. That's what I think.
All right. I thought
it's somewhat hypocritical for us to say, oh, only certain select people get to defend their countries, and others, guess what? You can't have those same type of weapons.
But when it comes to guns.
Right. So that's my whole point. But look, the best quote I heard on this was Albert Einstein when it comes to weapons and weapons of mass destruction. It was something to the effect that I know not with what weapons World War II will be fought, but I do know that World War III will be fought with sticks and stones.
Right.
So in other words, if we do use those nuclear weapons, we'll annihilate society.
Thanks to Albert Einstein and his friends.
Well, but he had to do it at that time for Hitler. I mean, you know, otherwise Hitler had all of Europe. Britain was the only country left, you know, in Europe that he didn't conquer. I mean, that guy, he was well on his way to dominating the world. So, I mean, obviously in instances of great evil and peril like that, it takes drastic measures, and that's why Albert Einstein painstaked over it. I mean, he felt so bad about having to use science in a destructive capacity. And many scientists, myself, I consider myself a scientist, are of that mindset. We really believe that science and technology should be used for the betterment of society, for the betterment of the human species, to eradicate disease and suffering and all kinds of inequities in society. But then if you happen to be probably an arch conservative scientist, then you really think that those technologies should be used for destruction and profit and monetary gain. And it's a completely separate worldview of how a liberal and a conservative looks at things. But look, let's get back to the Freedom Lines at 1-866-987-THOM. That's 1-866-987-8466. And let me see. First up in the queue, I have Dave, who's on the line from KGOE in Humboldt, California. Dave, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program.
Dr. Mike, it's so good to be hearing you once again. I'm sure as a geriatric physician, you recall, we used to be regular callers, myself, a 95-year-old Alice from Eureka. We also, KGOE is a AM 1480 also, like U.S. in Arizona.
Oh, wow, check that
anyway,
out.
I very much agree with all the callers that have called so far on your previous topic, and I definitely feel that people have no right to tell one another who they can love or who they can marry. I think everybody's made that same point, so maybe it's not necessary to be redundant.
Well, yes, what? It is, Dave. It is necessary to be redundant because the more it's said, the more people will hear it, and then more people will accept it. So it's definitely not redundant, particularly when institutionalized discrimination exists against gay Americans.
Yeah, well, I'm also Bertrand Russell on Tom Hartman's chat room, and we've been discussing it a lot there, and I think everybody pretty much has come to the conclusion. Real conservatism, as it once was that nobody has the right to interfere and meddle in the lives of other people. Everybody has their own individual rights to decide who they want to marry and not have that imposed on them either by the government or by any power group. It's just not something you do.
No, I agree, Dave. Well, listen, let me get to the other Freedom Lines here, Dave. A lot of people hold, so I appreciate your patience, and thanks for calling in, buddy.
Yeah.
Okay.
Hey, did you realize that the town of Nelson, Georgia, just passed a law where it's mandatory for heads of a household to own guns?
Yes, I saw that. That's ridiculous.
Way to take it one next level.
Conservatives are so wacky, man. I'm telling you. There's so many stories. Look, we're going to be on the air, like I said, today, Thursday, Friday, then all of next week except Tuesday. So lots to talk about, Eric. But one of the stories I eventually want to get to, too, I don't know if you heard about this or if we talked about it on the local show, about that teacher in Idaho who was teaching high school, 10th grade, and he was teaching the reproductive system, and he actually had the audacity to use the word vagina when talking about
biology.
And it's a small town in Idaho. I'll get to the story, you know, at some point.
He got fired?
But no, parents were outraged. They took it to the superintendent of the schools, and they wanted him fired, but then the superintendent was feeling the pressure, and I think he wants to now send a letter of reprimand. I mean, it's an absolutely ridiculous
thing. How are you supposed to teach biology and anatomy?
Because I think you're supposed
to use those words.
Because you're supposed to say, like, well, look, and this is the woman's
vagina.
It's a vagina. Yeah, like you just can't say the word. I mean, it's almost going back.
You got to pull an Oprah on
to the Scopes monkey trial day.
Right.
I mean, this is the mindset of these
very. Was that, the '50s?
The Scopes monkey trial? No, that was
40?
Earlier than that. Really? Earlier than that, probably.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. Google it.
I will.
I think it was like in the 20s, actually. But this is how insane and pea brain really these conservatives are, and it's kind of sad, you know. It's kind of sad that, you know, we have so many people in this country who look at the world through that lens, through that filter, and not only look at the world like that, but they want to impose that worldview on everybody else. 1925. Yeah,
right.
I thought it was back then. It's a great movie. What was it called? The Inherit the Wind, I think it was called. Inherit the Wind, an incredible movie. Incredible movie. With who was it? Spencer Tracy, I think, was in the movie, if I'm not mistaken.
Playing Clarence Darrow?
Yeah. And then the other guy was from Bewitched, I thought. Darren McGavin, is that his name? I think he was one of the other lawyers.
Darren McGavin was on the
Night Stalker.
Yeah.
No, well, it's Darren. Well, Darren was his name in Bewitched.
I
figure out what his name is. I know he was in that movie as well. All right, well, listen. let's get back to the Freedom Lines right now. Let's see what some people have to say. Let's see. Next in the queue is Judy, and she's listening via free speech in Hot Springs, Arkansas. So let's go to Judy. Judy, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Hi, thank you, and welcome to you, too.
Thank you.
Yeah, I was in agreement with everybody's opinion, you know, and there's so many issues going on right now, you could write a book. But the thing that I'm really insist about right now is the fact that everybody, including our Senator Mark Pryor, is against gun control because he's running for office again next year, and he wants to keep his office by siding with the NRA and not with the people's opinion, you know?
Well, Judy, do me a favor. Hold on for a second, okay? Just hold on a second. I want to get to you when we get back on the rebound. We got to go to a break, so stay with us.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
Dr. Mike Newcomb sitting in for Tom Hartman, broadcasting from 1480 KPHS. All righty, welcome back, my friends. The Freedom Lines are open. Let's get right to them. I have Judy on hold, so I wanted to give her an opportunity to finish her thoughts. I don't like to cut people off, Eric. I like to give them an opportunity to, you know, have their say.
You often hold people over through the break.
I know. It's probably – well, anyway. Judy, welcome back.
Hi, thank you. I was calling because I think that because everybody wants – or not everybody, but the NRA and it seems our legislature and Congress – all want people to keep their assault rifles and the high-capacity magazines, that if we tax each bullet, shell, or cartridge at the rate of, say, $10, I would prefer $100 per
right.
bullet, that if it cost you $3,000 to fire off a 30-round magazine, do you think you'd be willing to run into every building in town and shoot people? I don't think so.
Yeah, no, but I like your idea because a lot of times, even from the smoking perspective, right, if you want to try to get people to quit or give it financial incentive, you tax cigarettes, and we've done that here in our state in Arizona.
That doesn't stop
anybody. We did it in Arkansas, too. The pack of cigarettes is over $5 to cover the cost of recovery of damages. And as it is right now, if you get shot, you get nothing from anybody except if you've got a victims commission that'll reimburse you in your state, but that's not funded by the people who are doing the damage.
No, I hear you. Well, listen, I appreciate your call, and I like that idea, taxing the ammo, and hopefully that would be a financial disincentive. Thanks a lot, Judy. Take care.
You have a good day.
All right, you too.
Bye-bye.
All right, that's Hot Springs, Arkansas. All right, listen, we do have a talk radio news right now on the line. We have Bob Ney, who's joining us. So let's get to Bob and see what's happening today. Welcome, Bob.
Hello, Dr. Newcomb. Nice to be on the show.
Likewise, likewise. What do you got for us today, Bob?
Well, on the international front, of course, the hot item is North Korea, period, with the Chinese having moderate troop movements towards the Korean border, which is a mixed signal. One, they do support North Korea. Two, they're watching their own vested interests. If something happens, millions of people could come across that border. We have, the United States has deployed a missile-based system within the next 2 weeks that will be able to, you know, intercept missiles if need be. Of course, that's protecting Guam and Hawaii and our territory over there. So the bottom line is this is ratcheted up.
Sure.
Now, the president has some pretty good people with Secretary Kerry and also Chuck Hagel in defense.
Right.
To, you know, think this through. But this is...
Well, don't forget Bob Dennis Rodman, too.
When I was in Congress, every once in a while, a member would hop over on their own to North Korea, and we would just shake our heads because, you know, the diplomacy end over there is not understood. But so this is, you know, just really verbiage that we haven't seen the likes in years.
Do you think North Korea, though, Bob, is ultimately, is a lot of posturing here? What do you think the dynamic is? Why is Kim Jong-un, you know, sort of upping the rhetoric?
Well, you know, we looked at him and we said, oh, he's a young guy and he's been educated in the West and he's just out there, you know. We can say lunatic or crazy, Ahmadinejad type of thinking, maybe worse. And so we really don't know. That's such an isolated country. What's the military doing here? They don't even care about their own people. You know, they've convinced their people the Americans are starving them. So we really have a dangerous young person there, inexperienced.
Do you think he's trying to just burnish his image, so to speak, from a military perspective? Because he is young, he's got that little baby face, and he's, you know, trying to sort of win over his people in the sense that he's a strong military leader.
I think he's done that, but now it's went to the point where I don't know if he can retract some of this. You know, it even got to the point where some of the things North and South shared, an industrial park, has stopped. When you see those types of signs, it might seem trite, but it's a big deal. So I don't know. He might have just went way over the diving board, but it's a real problem. On the domestic front, the president is still trying to keep alive and the debate on the gun issue. But I have to tell you, you know, if you just look what's going on in the United States Senate, and then when it hits the Republican House, the entire bill, if anything, is just going to be into some problems. You know, the power of the lobby is incredible. On this issue, and it's like the immigration issue too. The right neocons, the real right wing, are trying to do everything to sabotage an immigration bill. But there is communication between Senator Schumer, Democratic side, and Senator Rubio, who is, you know, Republicans are looking towards him as their 2016 person. So at the end of the day, he may or may not be, but he may help in the immigration debate.
Why didn't they get rid of that filibuster? Why, when Harry Reid had a chance here, Bob, to change the laws and so that you don't need 60 votes to do anything in the Senate, why was that not addressed?
Well, let me swipe at both parties. Having been in Congress in the House as a Republican, but let me swipe at both. You know, the party in power all of a sudden wants to get rid of the filibusters. When they become the party in minority, they like to use them. So they have just missed the boat. Now, Republicans started the idiotic, what I think anyway, the closure rule, which everybody's like, why do you have to have 60-some votes? And so you look back historically, neither party just, you know, doesn't get the gumption when it's in the minority to say, let's not do this.
Right. Yeah, interesting. What else we got going on there?
Well, as far as the immigration issue is, you know, the big point, the White House is they're pushing banks on home loans, which I think is going to be well received to do something. And then there's the Atlanta cheating scandal, which is not a congressional issue, but they'll probably start to look at it. You know, the pressure on some of the teachers to you know, do something and fix the test. And I don't know what they weren't paid to do this, so I don't know what that says about the system or how far out of whack the system's gone, but people are looking at that. The pipeline, you know, there's brand new criticism of Keystone Pipeline and what's going on with the spills and the problems, but it doesn't seem to stop it.
Right. Interesting stuff. All right, well, listen, Bob, we appreciate your time here with Talk Radio News Service and look forward to hearing from you again soon.
Thank you.
All right, there you have it, Bob May, former Congressman Bob May with Talk Radio News. I like that segment, Eric. You get a little nuggets of news and what's happening.
Of the world.
A little glimpse of the world, if you will. All right, well, listen, I know we got the whole Freedom Minds packed right now. We're going to get to everybody, Bruce from WWRL and Nick from Sirius and Vince and Jeff and Jackie, Carol, John, Sophia, everybody. Just stay patient there, like I say. We're going to get to you. We're going to be back at the top of the hour, too. I believe we do have an interview scheduled for that with Wendell Potter. We're going to talk a little bit about the health insurance industry and what's happening in the health insurance industry. So stay with us, my friends.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Okay, welcome back to the Tom Hartman Program, hour number three, my friends, and we do have a very special guest on the line right now as we speak. Many of you probably know who this gentleman is. He is known as a whistleblower, if you will, in the health insurance industry, and we all should be thanking Wendell Potter for the good work that he's done. He's also an author of Deadly Spin, and he's here today live on the phone, and we're going to talk about the insurance industry, and in particular, the high-deductible health plans, whether or not that is a silver bullet or some snake oil. So, Wendell, welcome to the show.
Mike, thank you very much. I appreciate being on the show and good to talk to you.
Yeah, likewise. Well, hey, just as a point of disclosure, too, I am a geriatric physician here in Arizona, so I happen to share a lot of your sentiment when it comes to health insurance companies and the way they operate in the marketplace. So I just wanted to let you know out of the gate that we're on common ground.
Well, thanks, Mike, and I'm talking to you from your hometown of Philadelphia. I came here when one of those big insurance companies moved me here to work here, and several years ago, so I just stayed.
All right, very nice. It's a beautiful city. I just got back there from the holiday there, the Easter holiday, and always great to go back to Philly, for sure.
Yeah.
Wendell, tell us a little bit about these the new sort of product, if you will, the high deductible insurance plans, or I guess what do they call them, consumer directed health plans.
Yeah, the euphemistic term is consumer directed health plans, also known as high deductible plans, and often you'll hear talk about health savings accounts, which are connected to high deductible plans. And it is often put out there by a lot of folks, particularly insurance company executives and their political allies, as being the silver bullet, the thing that we need to focus on that'll give people skin in the game, to use the term that they use, so that American patients, and they call them consumers, will be more aware of the real cost of health care, and that'll help to drive down the cost of care. That's the theory, anyway.
Yeah, well, given the fact that 75% of bankruptcies in America happen to do with health insurance problems, I think most people are aware of and have a lot of skin in the game, right?
Well, you're exactly right, and that's why I said in a piece that I wrote just this week, and you made a reference to it, and one of the reasons I left my job in the industry was because I was expected to be a promoter of these plans, and I came to realize that I was, if I did that, I would be pretty much a snake oil salesman, because they're not at all good health plans for people who are not wealthy. If you're wealthy and healthy, and if all of us in this country were wealthy and healthy, then it'd be great. But that's just sadly not the way it is. And and for those who are not all that healthy and people who are not of high income, these can be a disaster of a plan. They can make you much more susceptible to having to pay a lot more out of your own pocket for care than your budgets will allow.
Yeah, I mean, it's really ridiculous if you think about it. And I find it, quite frankly, offensive, Wendell, that the health insurance industry practices like this, because the bottom line is, as a physician, I want more people to access the healthcare system. I want more people to go to the doctor and get preventive care and make sure that they don't get sick and they don't end up in a hospital. But it seems as though that the way that insurance companies, for-profit insurance companies, are set up here in America, the whole, it's like a big scheme. It's a way of sort of disincentivizing patients to exercise the right of the benefit that they paid into. And an insurance company, correct me if I'm wrong, Wendell, but they would be very happy if all of their members never saw a doctor and never went into the hospital.
Well, exactly. And from their standpoint, the beauty of high deductible plans, it shifts more and more of the cost of care from them to us, their customers.
Right.
That is, if we have insurance. So they are paying less and less for care, and we're paying more and more. Again, if you're wealthy, you won't notice that so much. But if you are not, you definitely will. And it is people. One of the reasons why in this country so many Americans file for bankruptcy, even if they have health insurance,
correct,
is because of medical debt. They're still
right,
having to pay so much for medical care, even if they have insurance. They can't avoid bankruptcy or foreclosure.
Right, and that's exactly what I was alluding to earlier. I mean, for them to say, oh, people need more skin in the game, I mean, it's horrendous what's happening with respect. People have too much skin in the game, and that's the problem we have with, you know, the healthcare system here in America. Let's talk a little bit about that, Wendell, because you worked, who was it with, Cigna? Is that from my recollection that
Cigna
you worked
and
with?
And Humana before that.
And you worked with Humana and out in Kentucky, the national office there in Humana.
That's right.
You know, I scratch my head sometimes, and I think, you know, about private health insurance, okay? And my experience, frankly, throughout the 20 years or so that I've been practicing, Wendell, is that I don't really see a lot of value. I mean, you know, when you work with these health insurance plans, most of the things that they do is set up roadblocks so that people can't exercise the benefit that they have paid into. So in other words, you know, trying to get something approved, to get a simple x-ray or a CAT scan, and people have to jump through hurdles to do this and jump through hurdles to do that. It just seems that it is set up such that they make it very difficult for patients to access the benefit. And if the more successful they are at doing that, that means the less money that they pay out from the premiums they collected, the more profitable they are. And according to their shareholders, they're a better company, but they're not really doing anything to improve the health of populations of patients, are they?
No, they're not, and you make a very, very important point. Most Americans aren't aware of the remarkably big role that Wall Street and shareholders have in whether or not they get access to the care that they need, again, even if they are insured, because these big for-profit health insurance companies, like the ones that I used to work for, are owned by institutional investors who don't really care whether or not you get care or not. What they're what they want are ever increasing profits, and to make sure that shareholders are happy, the CEOs of these companies have to take steps to right. make sure that they're not spending more money on healthcare than they spent last year or even last quarter, and all that works against us as patients. These companies after years, been spending less and less of our premium dollars on healthcare and devoting more and more of it to profits and overhead.
Right, and you just alluded to the fact that these CEOs of these major national health plans, their goal is really to make sure that people, one, buy into the benefit, and that, two, that people get as least amount of the benefit as possible. But then you look like you said you work with Humana, and I think the current CEO is it Mike McAllister, is that correct, I think, currently?
That's correct.
Yeah, and Mike McAllister, he makes tens of millions, if not over $100 million a year. How does a CEO of a healthcare company who's not even a doctor, who doesn't provide actual services to patients, end up making that insane amount of money when they're not even doing anything to improve the health of its members?
The only justification for that is not justifiable, but the reason is because of, again, Wall Street. They reward CEOs, or CEOs are rewarded if they make Wall Street happy. That's who they really are concerned about. It is Wall Street analysts, financial analysts, and shareholders. That's why they're making these outrageous salaries. The CEO of Humana, the last year that he worked there, was the year after I left, he walked out the door with $110 million.
Unbelievable.
Just unbelievable how much money they make. There is no connection between what they do and people getting the access to care that they really need.
Right, and I can tell you, I know of no doctors that I am aware of that make $110 million a year, and we actually care for patients. All right, listen, Wendell, we got to go. As always, keep up the great work. It was great talking to you, and hopefully we'll see you again in the future.
Hope so, Mike. Thank you. Thank you
okay.
for your work.
Take care. All right, listen, we're going to be back with more of the Tom Hartman program. The Freedom Lines are open, and I'm going to go directly to your calls when we get back.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Dr. Mike Newcomb sitting in for Tom Hartman, and we're broadcasting live from the Valley's Progressive Talk, 1480 KPHX. All righty, welcome back. Eric, we have no further guests for the rest of the day, so that means we're going to be riding bareback and just going to the Freedom Lines and engaging the listeners in a very robust discussion.
Were you going to mention that Tom Horn is suing the town of Bisbee?
Didn't you just do that?
I just did.
Yes.
I did it for you, Mike.
Well, at the beginning of the show, we had Gene Connors, who's a council member.
A very forward-thinking man.
Forward-thinking man who got passed through the city council the right for people to marry and love one another. And it doesn't matter if you're a man and man or woman and woman or man and woman, according to the new law, which will go into effect, the ordinance in Bisbee
for that 4.8 square miles.
For that 4.8 square miles, which is how big it is, basically. If you go outside of there, nobody else will recognize your marriage. But for the sake of argument, it goes into effect in May, and now Tom Horn, our attorney general here in Arizona, is suing Bisbee, saying that indeed the state is the one who's supposed to regulate community property and that therefore Bisbee has no right to do that. So, but we know that's just a front from Tom Horn because he's just trying to get the national headlines, and he's known for very draconian measures here in Arizona.
Not only that, for hit and run and some other things as well.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess when you're the attorney general, you don't prosecute yourself.
No, not at all. So we'll keep you posted on that lawsuit as that evolves. But also, Tom is out in Germany, just so everybody knows. He's worked for quite a number of years with an organization called Salem International, and it is a non-denominational Christian, not-for-profit welfare organization, and it was founded back in 1957 by a gentleman named Gottfried Mueller, who has since passed, and Tom gave an amazing eulogy at this guy's funeral. But he founded it, Gottfried Mueller, back in 1957 with a bunch of his own friends in Stuttgart, Germany, and the name Salem stems from the Hebrew word shalom, which many of us know means peace. So all of the Salem projects that are affiliated through the shared values of peace, they help those in need and respect for life. And in that sense, Salem is actively working on global hotspots to help people in difficult situations regardless of their beliefs or nationality. And if you want to know a little bit more about what Tom's doing over there in Germany and the organization in particular, you can just check it out at www.saleminternational.org. Okay? So that being said, let's get back to our Freedom Lines. First up and holding the longest for an hour, 27 minutes, is Sophia from Mayville, Kentucky. Sophia, welcome.
Hello, Dr. Newcomb. Thanks for taking my call.
And thank you for holding.
I'll be quick, and then I'll take your comment off the air if you have one.
Sure.
Early in the show, you had a caller that defended the Proposition 8 law in California as having been democratically elected, so to speak.
Right.
As a lesbian, I fully support the right of any church to deny my access to holy matrimony.
Sure.
And the right of any congregation or individual to believe whatever they want about being gay, whether it's sinful, whatever.
Sure.
But civil marriage is a civil right. And the 14th Amendment, of the Constitution,
sure,
denies states the right to pass laws denying equal access to the laws and equal protection of the laws.
Right.
And Proposition 8, as well as DOMA, are pretty much blatantly unconstitutional, as far as I can tell.
No, I mean, Sophia, yeah, thank you very much. And so I agree 100% with Sophia, because that would be like, say you have some people here, I don't know, wherever, Arizona, and we had a legislator who wants to put an issue on the ballot and says, you know what, we want to deny Jews access to movie theaters here in Arizona. And if they get it on the ballot and 50% plus one vote says, you know what, we're all for that, we don't want Jews going to movie theaters here in Arizona, does that mean that it was quote-unquote democratically ushered through the system and therefore it's valid constitutionally? No, of course not. I mean, and you could say anything like that. Oh, we want to pass a law here in Arizona that basically gives the law enforcement agencies the right to interrogate and incarcerate people who have brown skin. Oh, wait, we did pass that law, didn't we, Eric, here in Arizona? It's called Senate Bill 1070, and that's wending its way through the courts right now, and it's being declared on many levels unconstitutional. Just because a group of people do something and vote on it doesn't mean that that actual law is constitutional. This is why we have a system of checks and balances in the American democratic system. That's why you have a legislative branch that actually legislates. They make the laws. You have an executive branch that executes on those laws. And then you have a judicial branch that determines whether or not the legislators or the executive branch were insane cuckoos. You know, and look, there was a time in our country where we did have laws on the book, i.e. slavery, i.e. Women's suffrage, where women actually could not vote. And the Supreme Court, the judicial branch, turned a blind eye and a deaf ear. So just because somebody puts it on a ballot and people vote doesn't mean it's constitutional. And that's the beauty of the way that this country operates, is that fundamental rights of liberty and freedom to live your life as you so choose, irrespective of what anyone else thinks about it from, you know, their own personal viewpoint or their own religious framework. It doesn't matter. As long as is it not harming anyone else, then that person, that individual has the right to live as he or she chooses, period. That's what freedom's about. But it seems always that freedom is under constant attack by conservatives. Conservatives are constantly looking for another group to discriminate against.
A bunch of busybodies.
They are. And yet, Eric, they shout from the highest mountaintops that, hey, we're the ones who are sort of the defenders of liberty and freedom. And it's those damn liberals are the ones who are, you know, trying to take away your freedom. And it's quite the opposite. It really is quite the opposite. Throughout the history of this great country, it has always been liberals who have fought for independence, who have fought for liberty, and have fought for freedom at the individual level. And it always will be. It always will be that way. Listen, we're going to get back to the Freedom Lines when we get back. And the number is 1-866-987-THOM. That's 1-866-987-8466.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
Dr. Mike Newcomb sitting in for Tom Hartman. All righty, welcome back to Freedom Express. Chugging along right now. And we're winding down, Eric, coming up to the final stop, the final destination for today. So, boy, it goes fast, doesn't it?
It did today.
It goes very quickly. All right, well, listen, we got Vince on the line from Sirius. Actually, he's listening on Sirius. He's from Edison, New Jersey, and wants to comment on a few issues today. So, Vince, welcome to the program.
Thank you so much. It's a great, great show. I have two major comments. I'm a physician myself.
All right.
I really want to talk about what I'm a physician myself.
Oh, no. I said okay.
I wanted to talk about one thing, but real quickly about the gun issue. I'm an African-American male. I am independent. I grew up Democrat, but I'm independent at this point.
Okay.
Right? I say, you know, look, agreeable, reasonable laws for everybody. Now, when it comes to marriage, I don't have a right to tell anyone who they should marry, how they should love, or who they should love, or whatever. Just as much as I say that I don't have a right to tell anyone else what weapons or types of weapons or how many ammunition clips they should have to defend their family, as long as they follow the law. And when I look at this issue, there's a balance. I mean, you know, on the left, they're passionate about these guns, and on the right, they're passionate about, you know, keeping them. Same thing with the marriage thing. So, you know, I think that, you know, those two things need to be compared in terms of compromising. All right. And the other thing, as a physician, Dr. Mike, you're a physician, and I just started out. It's been 3 years now I've been out.
All right, welcome.
When it comes to reasonable laws, all right, and this is where I have a big problem, reasonable laws, all right, when I take care of a patient who is on Medicaid and I get paid $9, do you think it's reasonable law to expand that program without touching tort reform? And I say that with vigor because I pay about $12,000 a month just in malpractice.
Yeah, no. You pay $12,000 a month in malpractice?
Yeah, I'm a thoracic surgeon.
All right. I was going to say, you're not an internist then. But let me comment on that, Vince, because based off of the Affordable Care Act and what an Obama recognized that, Obama and his administration recognized there was a disparity in what, say, Medicare would pay versus Medicaid. And nationally, the rates for Medicaid reimbursement are definitely lower. So part of the Affordable Care Act was that, look, if a state decides to opt in and they participate in the Affordable Care Act, what the government does is for the first at least 3 years, pays 95% of the bills, and that the Medicaid reimbursement then becomes equivalent to what the Medicare reimbursement is. So actually, anybody who sees Medicaid patients from here on out, and if that state happens to be part of the, you know, the opt-in process, you're going to see the same reimbursement you get for Medicare. So I think that was smart, and I think he addressed the issue that you have with that.
But I understand that, but as I explain to my patients who are asking me to take them on, that's just for 3 years. Let me ask you that, Dr. Mike. Honestly, do you think that the state is going to continue to pay Medicare rates after 3 years?
It depends. It depends on how you look at things. Look, you're a thoracic surgeon, so you make your money basically by doing procedures, you know, very important procedures, which is fine. But I, as an internal medicine doctor, I don't make my money through procedures. I generate revenue through seeing patients and trying to keep them well and trying to make sure that they don't end up with catastrophic illnesses or things that are ultimately going to cost more money. So what I think the Affordable Care Act is doing, Vince, is it really is trying to get everybody working together. And I don't know if you're familiar with these ACOs, accountable care organizations, but they're trying to get everybody to collaborate together so that patients get the best possible care, and that patients aren't just, you know, being seen at the very end. Like in your case with thoracic surgery, sometimes I'm sure you see a lot of patients, you know, whose illnesses and diseases could have been, you know, prevented or ameliorated if they had good primary care, if they were watching their cholesterol, if their arteries weren't getting clogged up, et cetera, et cetera. But that's not the way our system works right now, and there's a lot of waste in the system. And I think that's what the Affordable Care Act is trying to address.
And I'm a realist, and I know that physicians are not going to be able to get paid more than what's going on right now. But my biggest issue is with, you know, real reform in terms of, like, malpractice insurance. I mean, it's driving doctors that are private practice, mind you, out of practice.
Sure. And look, and you're obviously with $12,000 a month, your malpractice insurance, you're in a specialty that obviously there are a lot more lawsuits and you know, you have a lot more exposure. But here's what I would recommend, and I'll get to the other calls. But and I think this is very reasonable, because when you talk about a jury of your peers, okay, I understand that concept. But in reality, medicine's very complex. Look, you went to medical school for 4 years, then you had to do a residency, you know, for 5 years, right, for a surgical residency. Then you had to do additional training, correct, for thoracic surgery. So you've invested a lot of time and energy, and you are probably one of the most highly trained people out there, educated people, when it comes to what you do. So it takes a lot of years to understand medicine, and particularly thoracic surgery. So what I recommend is that, look, if somebody's going to do a lawsuit, then there should be laws on the book that says it first goes through a screening committee. And that screening committee should be composed of people who are in healthcare, people who know healthcare, whether it's doctors, nurses, administrators in the healthcare sector. But and it should be such that all they're doing is saying whether or not something merits going forward. They're not judging innocence or guilt. They're just saying, look, there's enough here that at least it should go through. And I think if you do that, Vince, then what you're doing is taking away all that frivolous crap that happens out there, these money-hungry lawyers who just want to try to get a big settlement. And then you filter out things that really have medical merit, and then it could go to a jury the traditional way. I think that, for me, that would be a good part of tort reform.
What do you think the future of private practice in this country is?
I think it's bright. I think it is. I think the healthcare system is going through a lot of changes right now, but I think it's all for the better. And I think when all the dust settles and all the political rhetoric dies down, I think, you know, we do have the best healthcare system in the world. We have the components of it, but right now, like I often tell people, Vince, the components are not working together. Just like you have an orchestra, if you have a great oboist and a cellist and a violinist, if they're not working together and there's no maestro, then it makes noise, not music. So if we can get everybody working together, people like yourself, highly trained thoracic surgeons, people like me, internal medicine, preventive care people, get the hospitals working with us, the skilled nursing facilities working with us, the government working with us, the insurance companies. Once we all start working together and stop trying to slice out our own little in concert and stop trying to slice out our own little piece and be selfish about it, I do have great optimism and hope. And I've been practicing for over 20 years now, Vince. I know you've been out for 3 years, but you know, I've been practicing for 20 years.
When does your radio show start?
Oh, we do it here locally. We do it here locally in Arizona. But
national, man.
All right. Well, listen, it's nice talking to you. Good luck with your career and best of luck.
Thank you.
All right. That's Vince, a thoracic surgeon calling out there from the East Coast. All right. Let's open up some more Freedom Lines right now at 1-866-987-TOM, T-H-O-M. That's 1-866-987-8466. Let's see who's next in the queue, Eric. It looks like we're going to go to Nick on the line from Sirius. He's listening on Sirius XM, and he also is from New York City. Nick, welcome to the table.
Hey, welcome. I have an answer to the whole solution. If we got to make it, or if the people on the left wish to have marriage equality, then there needs to be an amendment to the Constitution. The lady who had called.
But wait. Why would there need to be an amendment to the Constitution?
Yeah, it's already there.
A marriage amendment, because the lady who was the lesbian woman from California who was right. talking about Prop 8, and she was trying to use, the 17th Amendment to, the 14th Amendment to, you know, use as, you know, equal access to the law.
Equal protection under the law.
But if you think about it, if you're called a civil union and you have every single right that a married couple has, that is not unconstitutional. It is not unconstitutional to make distinctions between, say, a heterosexual individual and a homosexual individual. So by saying you have a civil union, but you are protected 100% with the same laws as the married couple, it is no longer discrimination. All it is a distinguishment between a heterosexual couple and a homosexual couple. So you cannot say it's unconstitutional because all it is a name. And the name has been established in society as between a man and a woman. But the laws are the same. If you don't like that, then make an amendment to the Constitution and try to get to...
No, but I think what she was arguing was that there can't be separate laws for heterosexual couples and then separate laws for homosexual couples. And I think she was saying...
So as long as the couples, no matter if you call it a civil union or a marriage, if you have the same protections, but one is called a civil union and one is called marriage... then it's not unconstitutional.
Well, no. That I think she would agree with you on that. I think if they had the same access to or the same protection under the law as heterosexual couples, I really don't think gay individuals would care less what it's called.
No. Many people in New York were crying about, no, it's separate but equal. We've had that before, and it doesn't always work. You know, and in New York, gay marriage is legal, and I believe in states' rights. So if the majority of people believe in that, I personally believe in civil unions, hey, then I have to abide by the law. But the people in California, they spoke and they said, no, we're not for it. However, all right. Where their problem lies is that they should have said, hey, Prop 8, no, don't call it marriage,
all right.
But you have to.
I got you, Nick. Hey, listen, buddy, I got to run. I'm up against the heartbreak, so I appreciate all your time. We're going to be back with more of your calls. Stay with us.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
Dr. Mike Newcomb sitting in for the rest of the week for Tom Hartman, and we're broadcasting from 1480 KPHX. Alrighty, welcome back. This is the final segment for the day as the Freedom Express pulls up to its final stop, its final destination. And that number is 1-866-987-THOM. Let's get back to the Freedom Lines. Let's go first to Robert on the line. He's listening in on Sirius XM satellite radio from Oxford, Mississippi, and wants to talk a little bit about the medical world. Robert, welcome to the table.
Hey, thank you so much for taking my call. Just had a quick question for you. I'm involved in the consulting industry on both medical and dental, and I was just wanting to get your opinion about personal responsibility when people who are on Medicaid and Medicare are given certain privileges with preventative care, and then from what I see from the doctors I deal with, do not respect those appointments nor the doctor as far as what they're given for free and how that affects medical and dental care overall.
Well, I mean, I'm not quite sure what you're asking, but I mean, are you saying that if somebody has a benefit and clarify your question a little bit more.
Like, for example, I was talking to a dentist in Oxford today,
talking about Medicaid and preventative services 2 times a year, no cost to the patient. They come in for free, get their oral cancer screening,
right,
get their teeth cleaned, get all those types of services.
Uh-huh.
And a lot of doctors do not participate in that because the no-show rate realistically is about 85% to 90%.
Right.
And
well, look,
that basically do not come in to get the preventative care, and that kind of concerns me. I have a real heart for ministry and taking care of people, but it kind of irks me to hear that people are given these services and they do not respect them.
Well,
I'm trying to get your opinion on that.
Well, my opinion is that shame on them. I mean, if you have a benefit and you have an insurance plan and you could utilize it such that you can get preventative care, and like you said, whether it's dental care or whether it's, you know, you're a diabetic and you can get some diabetic foot care or an eye exam or whatnot, if you as an individual choose not to do that, then that's, to me, foolish as a doctor. But I don't think you could judge a whole population of patients and basically say just because somebody's on Medicaid that they're all irresponsible. And like you just said, you're very much a faith-based person and a minister of sorts. And, you know, I'm not here to judge anyone, you know, Robert. That's up to God to judge people. I don't judge as a doctor. You know, I'm there in the office, and if they want to come see me and they have an appointment, and I would hope they would make it. And if they have a benefit, I would hope they would utilize it and work in concert with me as a physician to keep them as well as possible. So, but you know, people who don't show up. Look, there's people who are very wealthy, you know, who don't show up to doctor's appointments too. You know, they're doing their own thing. So, I agree with you. They should take personal responsibility. And if they don't, and they don't exercise their benefit, and they don't look after their health and their body, then they're going to suffer adverse consequences.
Yeah, and I guess my reaction to that would be, what we're looking forward to giving more people more benefits. I see what's going on right now in the industry. What's your opinion on how that's going to move forward with the new healthcare initiative?
Well, look, I mean,
it's driving up costs. People don't come in and they don't get the services needed.
Well, but
where's the balance between responsibility and giving people more?
Well, that's a debate that I'm sure is going to rage. I mean, I don't know if you were listening earlier when we had Wendell Potter on, and he's talking about, you know, putting skin in. Well, he wasn't talking about it, but a lot of the health insurance companies are saying, you know, they're creating these high deductible plans now such that, you know, it gives people skin in the game, quote unquote, and that if they realize that, hey, I got to pay all of this money now if I get sick or if I do this or that, I'm going to take better care of myself. But I think the opposite happens, because I see this in healthcare all the time. People who have high deductible plans, and maybe they are playing by the rules and they're doing everything they're supposed to, but then they get sick or they get abdominal pain, and then they don't want to go to the hospital because they're afraid that if they get admitted, there's going to be this high deductible, and financially it's going to hit them very hard. So I don't agree with the premise of the insurance company that by having high deductible plans, it's going to make people have skin in the game and take better care of themselves. On the contrary, what I think is going to happen is people are going to not utilize the benefit, not access the system in the hope of saving a few bucks, but unfortunately they can end up with a catastrophic illness, and you know, I don't like that either. But listen, good question, good food for thought, and thanks for calling in.
Thank you, sir.
All righty. That's Robert calling in from Oxford, Mississippi. Let's get to a few other callers here, Eric, and let's go next to John from Sebring, Florida. John, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Well, thank you. Obama says that these the so-called military-style assault weapons have no place on our streets. Okay, first off, there's no such thing as an assault weapon. You could use a pencil to commit an assault, or you could use an AR-15 to defend yourself.
And you know what? You're correct with the pencil.
Assault.
When I was in that grade
again. We sell more weapons all around the world than any other country. We sell jets and bombs and missiles and tanks. Those are
And then they end up being
used
against us.
Just in the battlefield. Those are used where people live. But somehow that's okay.
I agree with you. It's not okay.
The other thing is, you have to put it in perspective. Almost half a million people die of tobacco every year. Almost 100,000 people die of alcohol.
Sure.
Over 100,000 people die every year because they went to the doctor and they did what the doctor told them to do.
Sure.
Put it in perspective. Okay? And, you know, the whole idea, 10 rounds is enough. You know? They come right out and say, well, we want to go kill this guy while he's reloading. Well, what if the bad guy wants to kill me while I'm reloading?
No, I hear you, John. Well, listen, a lot of good points there, but I'm going to get to some of the other callers here because we're going to be wrapping it up and let's go to the last caller, Ben from Sirius. Ben, you got about 20, 30 seconds.
Yeah, to the caller who was talking about the gay marriage issue, was discussed in the Supreme Court debates that this could impose the decision in Brown v. the Board of Education, separate but equal, is unconstitutional. And that that's true in the language of the law as well as how it's put forward and how it's executed.
I agree with you. Well said, Ben. You got the last word, buddy. Thanks for calling in.
Thank you.
All right, there you have it. Okay, well, listen, we're going to be back tomorrow. Same bat time, same bat place. And look forward to, again, continuing forward with the Freedom Express and subbing in for Tom, who, as you all know, is in Germany. And, hey, as he says, democracy is a participatory sport. So, tag, you're it.
Listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, go to tomhartman.com.